This is Shatana Powell, and we're in a new season of Afrofuturism in the AM. I go by the seasons, so January, February, March. That was season one, quarter one. So we're in quarter two, season two of Afrofuturism in the AM. And I just wanted to take a little second to do a couple of things. First, say good morning. Good morning. I want us to get settled in. Let me reintroduce myself. I'm going to introduce myself again and kind of set up the context for this second season of Afrofuturism in the AM. So again, I want you to take some time. Take a moment to think about what you really need. I don't know, if you need some water, go get some water. You need some tea, go get some tea. I'm going to take care of what I need, and I'm going to come back in a moment to really get into it. So, yeah. Introduction. I really, technical difficulties. I accidentally unplugged the mic again. If they don't see you trying, they don't know that you ever struggled. Anyways, I really like that song. I really enjoy KRS-One. And so I'm glad that you've had a second now to get some water. I have a little coffee to brighten up my day. Someone asked me once, what's the difference between coffee and tea? And I was like, coffee is for the average working man, you know? It's a cup of joe, cup of mud, get up, get to it. Whereas tea has a whole ritual, you know? There's tea time, you got tea and biscuits. It's for the upper class. They take like 3 hours in the middle of the day just to enjoy some tea outside in the garden, on the veranda, something like that, you know? But don't let the class differences between tea and coffee keep you from enjoying your life. So Afrofuturism in the AM, season two. So this season, we're talking about faith, family, and what was that last one? Freedom. Faith, family, and freedom. And usually I tend to think of this as a progressive show. So each month, we don't really abandon anything. We take what we learned in the previous month and try to extend that learning into our next topic. So in this season of Afrofuturism in the AM with Shatana Powell, that's me, we're going to be really investigating how Black faith is related to Black family and how all of that is also related to Black freedom. Now, just in case you're just joining us, this is your first time enjoying this meditation show, I want to give you a little preview, a little background about what we're doing here and why we're doing it. So Afrofuturism in the AM is a meditation show, and we're meditating on how we can design the best practices for our future. In the first season of Afrofuturism in the AM, we learned a couple of things about designing our future, and I'm just going to quickly recap. We learned that in order to design our future, we really need to focus on our health, because we cannot have a revolution, we cannot be in the future without our bodies. If we're not healthy, we're not going to be able to live into the future. So number one priority is always taking care of our health. But when we really investigated what it means for Black people to take care of their health, what we learned was our mental health is really the foundation of all of our other healthy activities, because our mental health is going to give us that push we need to have a gym routine, which is strenuous, or that push we need to create like a meditation practice where we're getting up every morning and stretching, drinking water. You know, it's going to give us that push we need to communicate effectively, to communicate what we think, what we need without being afraid. And that really, the center of all that comes down to our mental health. So again, when we are talking about like, well, how does that really work? Like, we understand that we need to center our mental health in order to center our well-being. But when designing the future, because February was Black Futures Month, what does it really even mean to design the future? This seems like highfalutin language. I'm not sure if I agree. So when we started to get into what does it mean to be in the future, we started to understand that the future is now, very much so, a true statement. When we're talking about, you know, time itself, Black people have been, you know, in this situation, in the new world, in white supremacy, we've been here for about 400 years plus at this point. So when designing the future, we understand that we need to establish practices now, right? Like, we can't wait till tomorrow, because they want us to believe that the future is later. So we feel as if we have time for inaction. So you need to begin now putting in practice all the things that you want to see in your world. But beyond that, really, when creating the future, the thing that we zeroed in on is that the future is indeed an act of creation. So you have to create it. The thing that you want isn't going to happen spontaneously and by miracles. It's not going to happen because there's someone who's going to come and do it for you. There's no one leader that can lead us into the future, because as we all know, leaders can die and be killed. You, yourself, yes, you, listening, you need to begin acting now to create what it is that you want to see in the future. But then, you know, we came across some problems because, you know, basically, people have a really hard time imagining what they want. And this is not, you know, our fault particularly. If we go back to the facts, you know, I like facts. We really learn that in Houston specifically, only about 4% of the African American population actually participates in cultural activities. Now, this was some research that was done between like 2016 and 2018, where they surveyed a lot of arts institutions just to get an understanding of who was coming to museums and cultural events. And they also surveyed the workforce, like who actually works in these museums, who actually works in these creative spaces. And the numbers were astronomically alarming. We learned that only 4% of African Americans are actually employed in creative industries. And that's talking about employment. And then when you even, you know, kind of zero in on who is attending, not just who's working the event, not just who's working at the museum, not just who's working at this cultural conference, who is actually attending, they learned that somewhere between like around 2% of the attendants, of the attendees, were African American. Alarming. We make up about 16% of Houston. And Houston is touted, that's a word, but it's highly recognized as a mecca for Black folks. We have so many Black institutions here in Houston. We have a very diverse African-American population. And when I mean diverse African-American population, there's not just one ethnicity in Houston that calls themselves African-American or Black. We have African Americans, people from the African diaspora from all over who occupy this city that we live in. So how is it that only 2% of our population actually attends cultural events and only 4% of our population is employed in creative and cultural work? Now that's a question we need to investigate. So when designing the future, you know, we realize that it's really about imagination, and our community doesn't get a chance to imagine very often. And we make connections between why. And one of those connections is really about our education, because our education system, they divest, which means that they stop paying for the arts, or they put us into tracks where Hispanic and African American students are oftentimes put into remedial tracks, which means that you're only getting, you know, the very basics, English, you know, math, and not even the good English, not even the English where you get to read Toni Morrison, not even the English where you get to write poetry in class. I'm talking about star test English. I'm talking about, is it A, is it B, or is it C? And you didn't even get to read the whole book. They just gave you a paragraph to, like, decipher. Very, very bad practices in our education that discourages imagination and creativity, but instead pushes our students into an assimilation mindset where they're very dependent on an expert to tell them the answer. So that's one reason why, you know, we're not really engaged in creative fields. But there are more reasons, one among which is our mental health. White supremacy acts in such a way that we are constantly dealing with trauma. You know, this past month or so, I'm sure if you took a second right now and wrote down at least five things that was traumatizing, it wouldn't be too hard of a task, right? I can think of the George Floyd trial, right? That's the thing that's happening. I can think of even conversations around the freeze, the Arctic freeze, and how many people passed away. I can think of conversations about DMX and how he passed away. And, you know, we mourn his loss. We mourn the loss of his life, of his soul, of his creativity. And having to just kind of work through those campaigns of trauma. That's what I like to call them, because they're always, it's a concerted effort to constantly traumatize people in the African diaspora. So these campaigns of trauma, we oftentimes don't take a chance, get a chance, or afforded a chance to work through what all this trauma is doing to our health and our well-being. And the number one thing that I identify that happens when we're not working through our trauma is we lack imagination. We lack creativity. Because if you're traumatized, the only thing you're looking for is the very basics. You want to have basic security. You want to have basic, you know, job security so you can make enough money to have basic housing, because you're traumatized and you don't want to continue to be traumatized. You don't want to push past the status quo. So with that in mind, we then began to work through how our mental health impacts our imagination, but more so in the month of March, we wanted to know, like, how this lack of peace in our lives either takes away from our joy, or in another way, like another way to state that, like, we were investigating how do we build joy in a world filled with trauma in which we don't get a chance to work through that trauma for our mental health and our well-being. How do we create joy in this world? And through my conversations with my co-host Tiffany, shout out to Tiffany, hey there, we learned that Black joy is very dependent upon your practice of creating peace in your life. So you can be joyful, but it takes a little bit of time to establish a practice that encourages peace. And some of those things that encourage peace include, you know, what is it that you need to love yourself? You know, what is it that your body is telling you you need? Do you need water? Which is why I asked you to go get water. Did you go get some water? Did you? I hope you go get some water. I got some coffee, like I said. But, you know, doing things that your body says it needs, listening to yourself, loving yourself, knowing what you want and what you don't want, knowing when to say no because it doesn't serve you or your spirit says, I'm not into that and I'm not going to do it. These are things that build joy. And all of these topics are super, super interrelated. You can't have joy without having mental health. And your mental health and your joy is a thing that encourages your imagination. And through your imagination, you can create. And in creating, you do create the future. So that's how things have been going in the first season of 2021. And so now that I've done that little recap and review, what I want us to do for a second is I want us to take some time to go over what is Black faith. What is Black faith? So this is the month of April, and our topic for April is Black faith. And some of the things that, you know, are heavy on my mind is what does it mean to have faith? What is the spiritual? What is spirit? What is the thing that creates spiritual belief? When we were leaving March, like in the very end of March, I asked a couple of people who are on the show, what is it that Black people believe in? Because, you know, I have very little faith in a lot of things. I have very little faith in our government. Sometimes I have very little faith in my fellow man, and I'm not the only one, you know? And some of the answers I got back, for example, from Cassandra, who was here talking to us about Black joy, she said that, you know, her family is the thing that she really thinks about when she's thinking about belief and faith, right? Her family and the love that they give and the support that they give and even the way that they are, that's the thing that she remembers when she's reflecting on her experiences in faith. So I think we're on to something there. And what I've done is I've written out some things, and this is a segment of the show I call What Are the Facts? What are some facts? So before we get into the facts, I do want to shout out Michelle Barnes from the Community Arts Collective. This upcoming summertime season, we're going to be working with them on some K-12 workshops, and I really look forward to doing that. We're going to be talking about quilts and freedom, which is right on time because around June, we're talking about Black freedom. And I really look forward to debuting the Afrofuturism 2.0 curriculum in addition to the Artivism Community Art subscription boxes. These subscription boxes come with meditation cards. They come with activities for you to increase your imagination and creative practices as you meditate on what it is that you want for the future. And as we continue to have these conversations on how to design a world in which we can be happy, we can live, in which we can imagine, and we can see all the things we imagine come into reality. So if you haven't had a chance to take a look at my Instagram page, you should go to Artivism Community Art on Instagram. And you'll see quite a few posts about the Artivism Community Art subscription box, which we are launching this season, in addition to, or, you know, in tandem with our curriculum. So go ahead and check that out. So what I think I'm going to do is actually give us all a chance to breathe. A lot of times when we have a lot to say, we talk really fast. And I know that I tend to not listen unless I have opportunities to process. And what I want you to do is to take time to breathe and to process the things that I've just said. process what does it mean to be healthy for you. Process how is it that you encourage imagination and creation in your life. I want you to process what are the things that you do to increase peace in your life. And when we come back, we're going to get into what I believe are the facts, what I believe are the facts about Black faith. So yeah, enjoy. The ways of the world. Be weary of the ways of the world. I'm weary of the ways of the world. Welcome back. A little Solange for you. Weary. One of my favorite songs, by the way. It's not likely she's listening, but shout out to Solange out there. Thank you for making that song. I really enjoy it. So when it comes to faith and religion, most people commonly begin to draw reference to major religions and ideologies of the world, such as Christianity, Judaism, or Islam. But what I would like is to begin this conversation on Black faith by stripping down common conceptions of what faith, spirit, and religion is so that we can understand how faith is utilized among those who identify as Black. But what's funny is before we can move forward, I really have to define and discuss what I mean by the word Black. Deceptively, one might assume that someone is Black because their skin contains a lot of melanin and they look brown with woolly hair. And indeed, this simple definition of the word Black has been used by white supremacy to identify and categorize a large portion of the human race as not human. Blackness as a concept only came into the world as a result of white supremacy and the transatlantic slave trade. Prior to this time in world history, there was no concept of the word Black as it refers to humans and the human race. That is because race itself did not exist before enslavement. Interesting. The average person before the 15th century, so just think about the 15th century, that's the 1400s. So the average person before the 15th century identified themselves based on their ethnic group. Basically, before the 1400s, no human would call themselves white or black. They would say, I am Ashanti, I am Fulani, I am Welsh, I am Gaelic. Over time, as the transatlantic slave trade stole children, they did steal children, literally stole children, enslaved and captured women, and also enslaved and captured men. As the transatlantic slave trade committed these crimes on the African continent, and as they transported these people across the globe, the distinctions based on ethnicity, which identifies people based on a shared culture, a shared language, and a shared history, it changes. It necessarily changes. So those people who would previously identify as Ashanti or Fulani, those people from the continent who were taken from West Africa, all of a sudden are now all categorized as enslaved, the enslaved. And they no longer can rely on ethnicity, which is their language and their culture and their previous way of thinking about God. They can't rely on that because they're literally being stolen from their home and placed in a place that they call the New World. We currently, you know, the place, if you're in Houston, you currently live in part of the New World. If you're, I don't know where you are, but it's suffice to say that we're in a different world than those people were in the 1400s. So the moment that that happened, like the moment the first person was taken and transported into the New World, the way that they categorized and understood themselves transformed. But even still, this doesn't really completely explain what I mean when I say the word black. And I mean black as a political identity, right? What is it to have blackness as a political identity? Because it's one thing to be brown. It's one thing to have woolly skin. I mean, not woolly skin, but woolly hair. You know, in all honesty, all people are from Africa. Even the white people are from Africa. It's really just a question of when did you leave, right? The human race is from Africa. So when I say the word black, I'm talking about black as a political identity. So what does it mean to have blackness as a political identity? When the children and women and men who were stolen from their homes on the continent of Africa made it to the New World, always the first question in their minds was, can I trust you? And just think about that. Really put yourself in their place, like situate yourself there. You were stolen from your home. You were captured from your home. You were enslaved, chained, put on a boat, and put into a new place and a new context. And the people who stole you weren't always necessarily white. They didn't necessarily look Caucasian. They didn't necessarily always look like they were from Europe. Sometimes those people looked brown with woolly hair. So when you encountered a new person who looks brown with woolly hair in this new situation that you find yourself in, the first question on your minds always will be, can I trust you? Because not all my skin folk are my kinfolk, right? So when they meet another person who looked like them, they always ask themselves, like, who are you and what do you believe? And I really wanted to really think about, like, when talking about black faith, blackness, like, why is it? Why is it that that had to be a central question? Who are you really and what do you believe? You can be brown like me, but who are you really and what do you believe? And the reason why this is such a good question is because Not every brown person with woolly hair believes the same thing. Some brown people who have woolly hair have beliefs that support enslavement. These people have a belief system that support, you know, white supremacy. And even though they have a belief system that supports white supremacy, they are still categorized and seen as black in the eyes of white supremacy. I'm going to say that again. Just because they're black or brown, like they appear brown, they have melanin in their skin, and they have woolly hair, sometimes people who look brown and have melanin in their skin and have woolly hair have ideologies and philosophies that support white supremacy, but they are still called black from the eyes of a white supremacist system. That's confusing. That's so confusing. So you mean to tell me that there are those who are called black, but support the logic that dehumanizes those who are deemed black? You mean to tell me that there are brown people with woolly hair that support their own enslavement? And the answer is yes. Yes, there are. Whatever outrage you have about that, that's a fact. Those are the facts. Whatever outrage you have about that, those are the facts. So that's why during the Black Power movement in the 1960s, the word black was reclaimed. This usage of the word black as a political identity can be seen in the speeches of Marcus Garvey and subsequently in the words of Malcolm X, which is why today in 2021, when someone uses the word black as a means to identify themselves politically, they're really referring to a very, very specific experience. Now, again, I don't want to overload you. I don't want you to feel overwhelmed. And I really want you to feel this information, not just hear it, because it's one thing for me to say it in a really slow, calm voice, to give you references and history, to talk to you about it. This has been done. This has been done many, many times. And I don't think some people hear me. I really want you to feel me. I really want you to feel me. And in honor of DMX, who just recently passed away, he had this wonderful poem where he expressed the same sentiment. You know, he was on stage and he was talking about how he would constantly be trying to get people to understand what he was talking about when it came to his creativity, when it came to his truth, and people wouldn't even really be listening. He could be standing right in front of you and ask you a question like, how are you? And your answer would be yeah, which means that you don't really hear and you're not really feeling what is being said. So what I want you to do is I want you to take some time to actually hear me and actually feel me, which is why I'm not going to tell you what it means to be black or how blackness as a political identity really is understood. I'm going to let some music do that for me. So again, I want you to remember that not everyone who is my skin folk is my kin folk. Not everyone who has a black complexion believes the same thing, which means that blackness at this point is a political identity in the same way that whiteness is a political identity. White supremacy creates political identities that align with a white supremacist philosophy. And in the same way, blackness as a political identity has a set of philosophies that define what you understand yourself to be when you say, I am black. So I want you to just simply sit back and enjoy a little bit of music while you really take this information in. Enjoy. Put your bad self. Say it louder. We've been built and we've been scarred.
to make a pair. Brother, we can't quit until we get our share. Say it loud. Say it loud. One more time. Say it loud. I've worked on jobs with my feet in my hands. You know, all the work I did was for the other man. But now we the man's a chance to do things for ourselves. We're tired of beating our head against the wall and working for someone else.
Sometimes I think I lose some people. James Brown's a little bit dated. But again, I want you to feel me, not just hear me. So I didn't just prepare one song. But I do want you to think about what does it mean to be Black. So take a listen to this song real quick.
Being Black.
I said I love being Black.
I said I love being Black.
I
again, I don't want you to just, you know, have one reference. So I think this last song is going to be the last one I want you to really take in as we think about what does it mean to be black.
Black, my skin is so black, I'm rocking that black on black. It's black,
black rims on these black, black wheels in this black, black wheel with this black bitch. So black on black on black on black on
black, 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 black on black, black, my thoughts so black, black, black on black. My skin is so black, I'm rocking all black, everything is black,
black rims on these black, black wheels black, in this black, black wheel with this black bitch.
Black,
black,
black, black, black, black, black on black on black on black on.
Hey. Black out the coupe, hop out the roof when I run into you. Dark black as the dark side of the moon. Won't be no truce, won't be no truce. At your funeral in an all black suit. Couple white girls rocking all black too. Me and man marching in all black boots. Call up the troops, call up the troops. Punch you in the mouth, then knock out your tooth. I can tell when they not telling the truth. Talking that shit, nigga, what you gon' do? What you gon' do? What you gon' do? Back and I'm black and I'm acting brand new. Niggas in the back like, oh word. Diamonds all black like, fuck what you heard. Fuck what you heard. Fuck what you heard. Spilling some Hennessy black on the curb. Just for the memory of the deceased. When I black out, I'll awaken the beast. What it's gon' be? What it's gon' be? You don't wanna fuck with a nigga like me. Bet you never seen motherfuckers so black. Nigga, I'm black on black on black on black on black.
Black, black, black on black. Black, my thoughts so black. Black, black on black. My skin is so black, I'm rocking that black on black. It's black,
black rims on this black, black wheels in this black, black wheel with this black bitch. Black, so black on black on black on black on
black. Black, black, black on black. Black, my thoughts so black. Black, black on black. My skin is so black, I'm rocking all black. Everything is black,
black rims on this black, black wheels black, in this black, black wheel with this black bitch.
Black, 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 black,
I feel like Trayvon with this black hoodie on. Huey P. Newton, black revolution. I'm with a Nubian queen and some illegal aliens. I got a black fist balled up and it ain't just me, it's all us. 400 years of oppression, I'm about to give me that black Tesla. Black skid marks on the pavement, cops wanna see me in a black cage. Black on black on black, Master Juba with the tap dance. Gucci with the dapper dan, tell him kiss my black ass. Riding on a dyno with the black mags. Just another black man trying to stay up out the cask. Yeah, black don't crack, matter of fact, where the fuck are 40 acres at? We black on black on black on black on
black. Black, black, black on black. Black, my thoughts so black. Black, black on black. My skin is so black, I'm rocking that black on black is black.
Black rims on this black, black wheels in this black, black wheel with this black bitch.
Black,
so black on black on black on black on
black. Black, black, black on black. Black, my thoughts so black. Black, black on black. My skin is so black, I'm rocking all black. Everything is black.
Black rims on this black, black wheels black, in this black, black wheel with this black,
black
bitch.
Black, so black on black on black on black.
This kid black, Tim's black, hill tracks like I'm 6 black. Hair blacker than black, lips black, even my dick black. Granddad, Irish, Trinidad, guess I am half.
You gotta go to ancestry.com.
I think about the black, all the police ain't about the black. He's still a pig even though he black. Willie got a lynch head in that. If you black, you dead in that. Strange fruit hang from a tree, on the leaves is red in that. Do it right like a Garveyite, Africa, I'm heading back. Niggas in the street, black on black, killing with the heat. Cut off his feet,
put him in shackles.
Manta Musa been had the cash. Mix blacks to dilute black. Don't want blacks to produce blacks. Take black and they boot that. Orange is the new black.
Black, 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 black on black. Black, my thoughts so black. Black, black on black. My skin is so black, I'm rocking that black on black is black.
Black rims on this black, black wheels in this black, black wheel with this black bitch.
Black,
so black on black on black on black on
black. Black, black, black on black. Black, my thoughts so black. Black, black on black. My skin is so black, I'm rocking all black. Everything is black.
Black rims on this black, black wheels black, in this black, black wheel with this black bitch.
Black,
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 so black on black on black on black on
black. Black, black, black. Black on black, black.
Okay, so how did you like that? You have any questions? I want you to write them down. Write them down. You got a pen? Take a moment to go get a pen. Got some paper? Take a moment to go get some paper. You got a phone? Take out your phone. Go ahead and open up text message, note, Word. If you got Microsoft Word on your phone, not everyone does. Google Docs. Write down your questions. I really want you to write down these questions because I want you to investigate, what does it mean to be black? What does it mean for you to be black? Because blackness is a political identity, and it comes from a very specific experience. And those specific experiences all kind of trace their way back from enslavement through Jim Crow, through every campaign of terror that has been waged upon people who have melanin and woolly hair in service of extracting the most profit at the expense of our lives. So this is something that I really mean when I say black. And so when we are talking about and understanding how faith is utilized among those who identify from this very specific black experience, we really need to, and we really do understand that blackness is a political identity, and it doesn't depend on a person's outward appearance, but rather on their philosophical alignment right there. And when I talk about black faith, right, at its core, black faith is about philosophical alignment right there. And it sounds scary because how many people really get into their philosophical alignments? You really don't. Not unless you're in academia, not unless you're a philosopher, not unless you're just, you know, naturally interested and you start reading and learning. But at its core, black faith is a complete trust or confidence in a particular philosophical train of thought. And I think in the past, it's been really scary for me, at least, to really dive into black faith because of the age-old argument of assimilation or nationalism. It's always an argument that they'll present to you in an academic circle on the topic of blackness, and they'll always give you this false dichotomy. And I call it a false dichotomy because whenever you're only presented with two options, as if there isn't a third or fourth or fifth or an infinite number of options, then they're really, they, as in the academics or the philosophical thought leader, they're really trying to corral you into a very specific way of being. But just know that there is no one way to be black. Just know that there is no one way to be black, right? So as you write down what is blackness to you, how do you understand blackness, how do you perform blackness, know that everything that you write down is absolutely fine and absolutely okay and absolutely valid, because there is no one way to be black. At the end of the day, a black political identity is aligned on one core idea, and that's the idea of how do we exist as humans and everything that it means to be human. How do we exist as humans in a world that dehumanizes us? And how do we get rid of that world that dehumanizes us? That's what blackness means to me. So again, when we're talking about black faith, we're really talking about a complete confidence in a particular philosophical train of thought. And unlike major religions of the world, and like the major religions of the world, like Christianity and Islam, that can reference a single book that details the philosophy and values that organize how one might practice their faith, black faith does not utilize any one text. I really want you to think about that. There are black people who practice black faith who are a part of every major religion and sometimes do not even identify with any religion. Malcolm X was Islamic. Martin Luther King was Christian, right? There are many people who follow the major religions of the world, but they have a black faith that is very specific and very particular to their experience, right? So black faith doesn't follow any one text, but nonetheless, the philosophies that animate black faith are well established and accessible through study and experience. And I keep on saying the word experience because I feel like that's super important. There's a voice in my head that's like, you know what? I don't have any respect for academics. I didn't go to college. I don't care for college. You want me to go to a white college? You want me to go to a black college? It don't matter because it's all about capitalism. You go to college so you can get a job. Get a job so you can go to college. Why do I care about academics at all? And to that voice in my head, I want to say that blackness and black faith does not solely rely on studying. It is very, very dependent upon experience, right? All of this is so very, very academic when I start talking about, you know, philosophy and understanding your political alignment through philosophy, right? I think on this line of thought, the best voice that I've heard to really talk about this, like, is Neely Fuller Jr., who calls it VGQ, which is called Victim Guaranteed Qualification, in his book called The Compensatory Code. It has a very long name, but this is a basic idea that your experience in white supremacy as a person of color is equally as valid as any academic text. And I really want us to kind of think about that, especially for the scholars in the room, especially for those of you who say, I went to college, I got my degree. Just because you went to college and you got your degree does not invalidate anyone's experience who has lived through white supremacy. And I think also that's the problem. A lot of people who go to study Black studies, a lot of people who go to college to learn, tend to come out of that process in this power relationship that also goes towards supporting white supremacy and causes division. You believe that you and your voice alone can define Blackness, when in all reality, it's all about victim-guaranteed experience. Have you, as a Black person living in a white supremacist state in Texas, experienced white supremacy? The answer is absolutely. And what you have experienced is equally as valid as anyone who went and got their PhD. I just want you to sit with that. Knowledge itself should be more diverse. Your experiences and the way that you can relate your experiences should be more diverse, right? We shouldn't have to write a 20-page paper to say this place is a white supremacist state. We shouldn't have to write a whole entire book to explain exactly how we have experienced white supremacy, but that's the world we live in. And only those who have the privilege enough to write the book and publish it in a major publishing, you know, industry have the privilege enough to become a celebrity to say that they are the voice that can speak for Black people. And that is a false narrative. The reason why? Because you really should be very wary of your place in the world. You have no idea. They murdered Martin Luther King. They also murdered Malcolm X. They can murder you too. Just want to let you know that. So, victim qualified experience guarantees that everyone who experiences white supremacy can be a thought leader, can express their understanding about what white supremacy is, and can even develop practices, creative practices, that will design a future in which we all can experience health and wealth and well-being that doesn't have to include a white supremacist world. I know I just said a lot. And I really want you to take some time. You know, if you haven't, you know, really sat down with yourself and asked yourself, for example, are the things that I experience and articulate valid? How are you articulating it? Right? When was the last time you sat down to really digest and understand what your experiences are within white supremacy? That's a question I have for you. So I want you to think about that as I play a little bit of Gnarls Barkley, Going On. I really like this song. I feel like this is another song that really animates my understanding of what Black faith is. So enjoy.
Something we got to believe in. Connect the cause and the fact, one foot in front of the next. This is the start of a journey.
right, guys. So, moving on. I want to, you know, again, talking about the facts. When I was really thinking about these facts, I was like, what piece of literature, what poem, what thing that has been written by a Black person in the past really gets to the center of my idea about what is Black faith and how does it relate to the Black experience in the New World? And when I was really thinking very deeply about what poem or text I that really could guide my thoughts on this topic, my mind just again and again and again, it kept on leading me to W.E.B. Du Bois. He has a famous text that was written in 1903 called The Souls of Black Folk. It is a, I don't know, a concrete text. It's the thing that builds the very base of Black studies. I think when they're just like, we're going to study Black studies, someone slammed down W.E.B. Du Bois's book and they're like, we're going to start here. You know, in the very first chapter titled of his book, in the very first chapter, he has a chapter titled Of Our Spiritual Strivings. And in fact, if you enjoy Ta-Nehisi Coates, he took the very, very first line of this chapter and he made that the title of a book. So that just goes to show you how important and how much of a cornerstone this book by Du Bois is, right? In the chapter title of Our Spiritual Strivings, Du Bois talks about how the experience, not your heavy, intense studying in an academic institution. He talks about how the experience of Blackness in the New World has shaped his understanding of the spirit and what is spiritual. So what I want to do real quick is just to read it to you, because, you know, I don't know about you, but sometimes someone says I need to read something and I never go and find the book to read it. I'm just going to read some of this to you. And maybe if you like it, you can go get this book and read it on your own time. So, of our spiritual strivings. Between me and the other world, there is ever an unasked question. Unasked by some through feelings of delicacy, by others through the difficulty of rightly framing it. All nevertheless flutter around it. They approach me in a half-hesitant sort of way, eye me curiously or compassionately, and then instead of saying it directly, how does it feel to be a problem, they say. I know an excellent colored man in my town, or I fought at Meconville, or do not these southern outrages make your blood boil? At these I smile, or am interested, or reduce the boiling to a simmer, as the occasion may require, to the real question, how does it feel to be a problem? I answer seldom a word. Du Bois is known for his very poetic writings, one of the smartest men in the past, I don't know, century or so. When you actually do pick up this text, you will see that it's not always that easy to read, because who talks like that anymore? But it's okay. He talked like that, and it's really nice to be reminded that people talk like this. But yes, Du Bois, you know, talking to you in 2021 from 1903, this is the thing that really animates my understanding about what Black faith is. Because every single day, every single moment as a Black person, your experience boils down to this question by white men who believe in white supremacy. How does it feel to be a problem? How does it feel to be a problem? Because white supremacy is based on the idea that Black people are not human, and that the only thing Black people are here on this earth to do is to be utilized. To be utilized. So they will use you. They will use you for your labor. They will use you for your beauty. They will use you for your ability to produce children. They will use you for your brain. They will use you for your smarts. They will use you for your charisma. They will use you. And at the end, when you demand anything that even resembles human decency, they will ask you, how does it feel to be a problem? Because white supremacy never intended Black people with a capital B, even Black people who are assimilationists or whatever, they never intended for Black people to have anything that humans need to live a healthy life. As you continue reading, this is a very long chapter, He does come to this one point towards the end. Du Bois does. Du Bois comes to this one point at the end that I feel is particularly salient when it comes to talking about faith. And I'm going to read this one last paragraph at the end of the chapter called Of Our Spiritual Strivings. We, the darker ones, come even now not altogether empty-handed. There are today no truer exponents of the pure human spirit of the Declaration of Independence than the American Negroes. There is no true American music but that wild sweet melodies of the Negro slave. The American fairy tales and folklore are Indian and African, and all in all, we black men seem the sole oasis of simple faith and reverence in a dusty desert of dollars and smartness. Will America be poor if she replaces her brutal dyspeptic? That's what I'm talking about. These words, my friend. Dyspeptic. It's spelled D-Y-S-P-E-P-T-I-C. Look it up. Tell me what it means. Will America be poor if she replaces her brutal dyspeptic blundering with light-hearted but determined Negro humility, or her coarse and cruel wit with loving, jovial good humor, or her vulgar music with the soul of the sorrow songs? I know. Maybe I butchered the way that was supposed to flow. Again, if people don't see you trying, they don't ever think you ever struggled in life. Look, there's one part of this that I really liked. It says, all in all, we black men seem the sole oasis of simple faith and reverence in a dusty desert of dollars and smartness. And I really think that is the line of the day. That's the line of the day. Black people seem the only people truly looking for an answer as to how to live a healthy, happy life in the world where white supremacy exists, because black people are the ones that are most impacted by the dusty desert of dollars and smartness. He wrote that in 1903, and it's still true today, because this place is dusty. Look, if your imagination and the way you design your life, the way you design your creative products, the way you design your living and everything that touches it is based on this dusty desert of dollars and smartness, then you are supporting white supremacy, even if you're brown with melanin in your skin and woolly hair. And again, like Solange said, you should really be weary of your place in the world. So I chose this because I felt like Du Bois really does double down on what it means to have spiritual strivings as a black person who identifies politically as black. We've been in the New World under the boot of white supremacy for 400 years. That's 400 years of trying to figure out how to end white supremacy so that we can live a healthy life as black people. But it doesn't matter, because for 400 years there has been multiple campaigns of trauma. So what does it mean to be spiritual as a black person? In the coming weeks, I'm going to expand upon this sentiment of black faith. And even during this season, we're going to continue talking about black faith as it relates to black family and black freedom. And one of the texts that I'm really, really looking forward to talking to you about is James Baldwin's The Fire Next Time, because he starts off his conversation, about family. He starts off that conversation with this one quote that I really just want to say, because I think that it's really important as well when we're talking about black faith. He is talking to his family member, and he told his family member, you truly believe the things that white people say about you, you know? And that's the crisis right there. Do you truly believe the things that white people say about black people? Or do you really believe the things that are done to white people is a determinant of who that person is? Right? I guess one big, you know, thing that just stays in my mind is, you know, DMX, I think he died of a drug overdose. Does the fact that he died of a drug overdose determine his life? Is that a determinant of who he is as a black man? Or, you know, during the trial of George Floyd, they will point to the fact that he did drugs. You know, does the fact that he did drugs define his life as a black person? Does it justify his murder? Do you really believe the things that white people say? Because I don't. And my faith tells me, it lets me understand, it lets me know that there is a whole history, there's a whole philosophy, there's a whole way of thinking that informs what it means for me to act in faith as a black person. So how does all this fit into a conversation about art? That's really the last question. That's really the last question I kind of have for y'all. You know, because faith, art, how do those two things really fit together? And I kind of want to preface this with a song, always with a song with me. But I feel like music really helps you feel what I'm saying. Do you feel me? It really helps you feel the information. You know, art is an exploration of the unknown. We use art to clarify experiences, and through this process of creating art, we are able to articulate our theories and philosophies that come from our experiences. You should never have a philosophy that doesn't come from experience, because if you have a philosophy that doesn't come from experience, what kind of world are you really building? False idols. That's the word that came to my head. So through clarifying our experiences through art, we're able to understand very clearly what our experiences are, and then we can distill those down into theories and philosophies that make up the basis of our scientific thought as African Americans. A lot of times when you're talking about art, science, and religion, people don't really think about this, but art, science, and religion are all married together in one, you know, triangle that creates the world. A lot of times when we're thinking and talking about our experiences, the first thing that we do is we go through a creative process. If you've experienced trauma, you know, if you sit down and write a poem, paint a picture, you know, any of those things that involve you creating something from within your imagination, that's the first thing you do to understand something that you don't know. And then once you have gone through that creative process, you can further understand it by then really meditating upon what you've created, and then, you know, like creating some writing, something that really, you know, hits it on the head, nails down what you've experienced. And when you create that writing, that piece of writing, that's what is called science. A lot of scientific theories started in a church. And a lot of the things that started in a church came from a creative practice. One thing that's really, really, you know, looming large in my head as an example is photography. For a long period of time, people have been trying to capture the image of a human being. And in religious circles, the question of should the human face be captured was always one of fierce debate. Even when you talk to people who study Islam, practice Islam, Islamic people do not create faces. They will not, as a practice of their faith, create a face in art, through art form. And it's because of this idea that we are created in the image of God. So if we recreate any face whatsoever, we might just start worshiping that face as if it were God. This is one strain of thought that actually did lay the basis for the scientific creation that created a photograph. My God, that's so amazing. So lots of debate went back and forth whether or not we should recreate the image of a face, which might be recreating the image of God. And over time, different religious groups just began doing it. You know, Christians were one of the worst, you know, people. Christian people constantly creating the face of Jesus. That's why I don't believe in white Jesus, because white Jesus is a false idol. Someone created the face of Jesus. They were not supposed to, but they said, this is what God looks like. So in the process of capturing faces, theorizing on if the human face is the recreation of God's image itself, this process had to become better and better for some, you know, especially for Christian people. They kept on trying harder and harder to get, you know, those shadows in a portrait just right. They're trying harder and harder to get as close to realism in painting as possible. And it got to a certain point in human history to where there were some good painters. They were so great at really recreating the things that they saw. And then science jumped into the picture and created a photograph. And at that moment, every painter had an existential crisis. Every single painter, they're just like, my goodness, I've spent my whole life perfecting my technique on creating the most realistic image. And now there's this scientific device that can just simply capture the soul and essence of a human on a piece of paper. What is my life? And from there, that's when you start getting expressionist people who would now, instead of trying to create the most realistic version of what they see, were using colors and shapes to express their feelings as opposed to reality. And so painters went on that line of thought. They started to be expressionists, and those who are really interested in photography began another religious questioning, because now you had this box that could capture a human face with exact detail. And a lot of people were afraid to take a picture because they believed that if you were to take a picture, it would steal your soul itself. So that's why a lot of early photographs were only taken of those who were dead, right? You only sat down and took a picture after your soul was no longer inside of your body. Everyone felt like that was the safest solution to the question of if a photograph will steal your soul. Over time, of course, we really forgot about that question, if a photograph can indeed steal your soul, and we just started taking pictures. And then lots and lots of people started taking pictures until 2020, where now we have to have a picture of everything, because if you don't have a picture, no one believed it actually happened, which is really weird, because now we have something that is art that has replaced or, you know, really helped us question reality. When in the past we could just live our reality and believe that it happened, now we need a picture just to prove that things are really, really real. That's an example of how art will reinforce religious beliefs, and science is developed from these questions that start within religion or in our explore through art. And then eventually, through our scientific practices, we come up with philosophies and theories that, again, just support this triangle of art, science, and religion that help us explore the unknown. That was a lot. That was a lot. And I really want you to think about what is the unknown to you? Because when I come back, we're going to end this show. We only got 30 minutes, and 30 minutes is just enough time for me to really explore just one more topic with y'all on Black faith. So as we're gone, I want you to really ruminate on what is unknown to you. I know for me, the one thing that I don't know is, how do I live a healthy life in a white supremacist world? That's something I'm trying to figure out. So enjoy. Disparate Youth. I really like that song. I really feel like that is a great song for Black Faith Month. And the reason why is the lyrics. Obviously, I like all these lyrics. So in the lyrics, it says, if we go together. You know, it references that there's a storm. You know, they say that there are rules that we can't break, which, you know, I identify with. There are rules within white supremacy that you have to follow, lest your life be taken. And the only way to survive is to go together. I can't do anything by myself. We got to go together. And if you find that there are roadblocks, if you find that there are things that won't allow you to really fly, then what you really got to do is run. How good are you at running? How much do you keep up with that? How much do you really push past whatever boundaries, whatever roadblocks that they might put in your way, and really push yourself to live your dreams? Because at the end of the day, the life that you imagine is the life worth fighting for. And white supremacy will do everything to get you to compromise that life. It'll do everything to get you to understand that you should really support the logic that will subjugate you and cause you to be unwell. At its very core, Black faith is really something that is animated within that song. You know, what are you fighting for? So to end, really, this kind of, I guess, introduction to season two of Afrofuturism in the AM, as we talk about what is Black faith from, you know, my perspective as an African-American woman, I kind of want to end on this last little thought, which is Black faith, especially Black faith as it has been articulated by African Americans, and even more so than that, Black faith as it has been articulated by African American women has, since the inception of this country, tackled one of the biggest unknowns, which is, how do we end white supremacy while maintaining our health and our well-being, and our families? Through this spiritual inquiry, we have indeed created a worldview, something I call a cosmology. We have created a cosmology that is unmatched in the world. And it's a cosmology that actually works. It actually, time and time and time again, has worked against white supremacy. You know, when you're thinking like, how, Sway? Please tell me. Because white supremacy is still here. I always think of Ella Baker, you know, the architect of arts activism. I always think of those enslaved women who told our stories through quilts, who organized the Underground Railroad to save themselves and those who would come from enslavement. I think about the lives that Black women have created to create peace and sustainability for their children, who will always be born Black. Blackness is a political identity, and a lot of people don't want this smoke. They don't want this drama, which causes a lot of people to find ways to not experience the trauma that comes with Blackness. And to be honest, there is a way to escape Blackness. It's called assimilation. and over time, it was a belief that you could assimilate, but you can't assimilate into white supremacy, because at its very core, white supremacy does not believe that Black people are human, and it will do everything it can to use those that they see as resources to their benefit. I'm reminded of stories of Black women during enslavement who would have relationships with white men and have mixed race children. And over time, those mixed race children would continue having a relationship with white supremacists. And those children would become lighter and lighter and lighter through this like philosophical thought that was really passed down. You know, if you're Black, then you've heard these things like, what's wrong with your hair? Your hair is nappy. Don't stand out in the sun, you'll get black. You know, just many things that reifies assimilation into whiteness and encourages people through relationships with white supremacy to, you know, become lighter and lighter and lighter, to be ashamed of the skin that you're in, right? To be ashamed of your blackness, because as long as you are perceived to be black, then you will forever, as long as white supremacy exists, be asked, what does it feel like to be a problem? There was a study recently, I say recently, in like last 5 years, where a lot of people who identified as white did DNA tests and found out like they were like over 40%, 50% black. And the question is, how did that happen? You know, and the real answer is there was someone who was black and they began to pass as white because their complexion was light enough. And through successfully passing, they began to live a life as a white person, which again just goes back to my point that whiteness is a political identity equally as much as blackness is a political identity. If you're out there and your skin doesn't look as dark as mine, doesn't mean that your political identity cannot be aimed towards blackness. Because at the end of the day, race only exists as a result of white supremacy and enslavement. And if you are someone who has in the past considered yourself to be a white person, my real question is, do you know who you are? When was the last time you really figured that out? You know, because what you aren't is white. You might be Welsh. You might be Danish. You know, I don't know. But do you know? Because at a certain point, whiteness ends up having the same problems that it creates for blackness. So again, this idea that white follows black, if you, with a broad brush, just paint everyone into races and confuse people as to their lineage, you know, eventually you accept the idea that people are categorized along race, but that's only true in as much as sociology is concerned. Sociology is all about the way that we treat people. So race has no scientific basis, but it has a basis in our social relationships. Because I am black, I understand that my life is always at risk. Because I'm a black, I understand that my dreams will always be moderated by the expectations of someone who expects me to work for their benefit. So I just want you to think about that. Black faith. What are you doing with faith to end white supremacy? Now, we're about to be done. I'm about to get off. I'm about to go live my life, be happy and free. I'm about to go do the things that encourages a healthy life for me and my family. And what I want for you to do is nothing less than that. I want you to go and live your life and be happy. But as you're living your life, I do want you to just, again, think about your discipline. This is one thing that I spoke with a member of BSAM Houston about. You know, black faith for her name is Jalen. Shout out to Jalen. How you doing, Jalen? For Jalen, Black faith for her is really situated in your discipline. How disciplined are you to find the solutions that you need to live a happy and healthy life? How disciplined are you in your life plan? Like, if you say, I'm a singer, how disciplined are you in pursuing that dream? One quick story. I knew this one gentleman, and he said he was a rapper. He said he wanted to rap, and you know, he constantly talked about how he couldn't because of all the things. You know, there was stress. He didn't have the best equipment, and you know, I was listening to him talk, and I said, you know what, I can go out and buy you, you know, whatever you need. Just tell me what you need. And he began to attack me. He said, oh, what? So I'm supposed to be a rapper now? This was your dream. This was your dream. And now you're attacking me because I want to support you in that dream. And what I understood from that interaction is that he had no true conviction and discipline in the things that he dreamed about. Do you oftentimes have dreams, but you have no belief that you can actually achieve them? And you have no discipline to go about achieving them. And I understand, because the voice in my head is like, you want me to have discipline? Do you know how many hours I gotta go to work? Do you know how many people need my attention all day? Do you know at the end of the day I'm so tired I could barely keep my eyes open to do anything, but you want me to have discipline? If it's your dream, you gotta run. If you can't fly, you gotta run, because it's literally your life. It's literally your life. So with that, I'm going to end. I look forward to talking to you again next Saturday as we continue to explore Black faith. I believe next Saturday we're going to have Tiffany on the line. I know I promised today I would ask Tiffany what inspired her, but you know, we've just simply run out of time, and I'll ask her next time. So I look forward to hearing the things that have inspired Tiffany. And I also look forward to further exploring what Black faith is. If you have any questions or anything that you want to talk to me about, go ahead and go to Artivism Community Art on Instagram and at me, you know. Or, you know, you can send me a DM if your question's more personal. Please, no dick pics. No nothing that you wouldn't want your small child to see, or your wife, or someone who lives a happy and healthy life. Just, you know, go check my page out. Look forward to hearing from you all. Bye. Oh, look at that. I said goodbye, but there was no music playing.